It is the day after the expansion draft. The Seattle Kraken have put together a team. Is it a team that can win? Is it a team that we will even see on the ice come October? Neither of those questions can be answered at this point. It's Bob McCown, it's John Shannon, but we're going to dissect as best we can what the Kraken did yesterday, and as many in this business are attempting to do. But we got a couple of guys who know their way around this.
Yeah, sorry. What it really was a shame was is that by the time the show arrived last night at 8 o'clock, there were no secrets.
Well,
got to find a way to fix that. Now, I hope Bob, in our lifetime, there's never another expansion draft. I really believe that. I think that I hope they stay at 32, and 32 is a lovely number. But they have to find a way to fix all these leaks. That one.
Eric Dehochik, Billy Jaffe will join us after these messages. And we are back. It's McCown, it's Shannon, and the Hockey Pucks are joining us. Eric Dehochik of The Athletic, Billy Jaffe of Nesson. On the day after the expansion draft, or more accurately, I suppose, another expansion draft, George McPhee, the president now of the Vegas Golden Knights, was on with us yesterday, and we went through the whole process of how he put together that team during the same scenario we went through yesterday, and the days leading up to it, obviously, and the days after it. And I think it's fair to say that he kind of reinvented the wheel when he executed that draft. And it was, I guess, almost impossible for Seattle to follow suit, since so many general managers had essentially been fleeced by Vegas and the way they conducted their business, that they were now aware of what not to do. But when all is said and done, when you look at the first phase, and we'll get into this later on, but the first group of players that they have now under their control, how'd they do? Jaffe, first.
I wouldn't call them having gone, you know, bargain shopping completely, but they went more bargain shopping perhaps than Vegas did. I think where we, what's the old saying? I stink at these. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you, shame on me type of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what the GMs, I'm sure that's, I mean, even Ron Francis talked about that, basically that GMs weren't going to do the same thing that they did 5 years ago. And by the way, only six players from that roster that were drafted remain of the 30 players or the 29, 30 players remain with Vegas right now. So we're going to still see a ton of change, but I just think that Seattle did nice, but they've got a long way to go on paper, apples to apples after day one of the expansion draft. I don't even know if you can compare because of all the side deals that were done then versus now, but they're not as strong as Vegas was yet. Ronnie Francis saved a lot of money, fellas, and he could go out and do more fishing with a big lure and make his team significantly different and better in the next, 15 days.
Well, Eric, he's under $55 million in cap commitments, which gives him plenty of room, $25 million or so in room. But in order to do deals, you have to have players. Does he have players that other teams will want, or is he going to simply be dipping his fishing rod into the free agent ocean?
Well, I think two things, Bob. For sure, he is going to add more free agents than he has already, and he's grabbed a couple in Oleksiak and Larson and the goaltender Driedger. But I also think that the reason for preserving that $25 million or whatever is because now all of a sudden, Tampa has to get cap compliant. They have Gourdet, but Tampa needs to do more. There's still a lot of teams that have more work to do to get cap compliant. And Francis is going to use the remaining amount of money that he's got in his salary cap to leverage that cap room and get something in exchange. I mean, to me, the biggest surprise was that he wasn't able to get any kind of first round picks, seemingly hasn't been able to out of this exercise. So, Calgary, for example, I mean, the ask was a first and a third to lay off Giordano, and Calgary found that price too high. And so my sense is that that Francis set the prices extremely high and hoped that someone would blink, and no one really did. And so, you know, whereas George McPhee came out of his exercise with two extra firsts, but actually got, you know, like an upgrade from Winnipeg to go from 24 to 13 or 11. So he got a lot of draft capital that Seattle seemingly hasn't been able to get yet. Not to say that they're not going to pick it up in the days to come, but one of the things that George did really well in Vegas, and I remember he explained this to me afterwards, was that he said, we effectively did three drafts in one. He said, we had no base at all. So we got three firsts, we had three seconds. You know, we did 3 years worth of drafting in one fell swoop, and that was one of our goals. And I would think that Seattle is going to do a lot more of that slow and steady building process than even Vegas did, because Vegas, you know, pushed all their chips in by the end of the first year. And so in order to do that, you need to get draft capital. And as of the taping of this show, you know, we haven't seen any additional draft capital added. As I said, not to say that that can't happen in the hours and days to come, but that I felt that there would be some that emerged immediately from this exercise, and it didn't.
Eric, you surprised they didn't take some bigger names?
I am. Yeah, I am. And having said that, John, like I wrote, I don't know, 50 Seattle stories in 3.5 years. And I kept in every single story, kept issuing the caveat. I even printed the actual Vegas expansion draft and pointed out the names of players that never saw the light of day. Because, you know, fans kept saying, why would they take this worst player when these better players are available? And I said, just look, you know, Teemu Pulkkinen never saw the light of day. I mean, they had to take Clayton Stoner's contract to get Shea Theodore. So there's going to be some names that the casual fans, even kind of committed hockey fans, are not going to recognize. So that was always going to be part of the process. But there were more of those names than I thought on this list. And to me, we did an exercise trying to mimic the Seattle War Room just a day before the actual expansion draft. And one of the things we decided was, you know, if you have no cap commitment, you could push your chips in on a couple of players, you know, swing for the fences, use whatever cliche you want. And our guy was Gabe Landeskog. I mean, you know, the ask is high, but here's a guy who's in his prime, you know, third best player on maybe the second or third best team in the NHL. I would rather get a guy like Gabe Landeskog then, you know, spend what they spent to sign Jamie Oleksiak. You know, I think you can find those mid-level defenders. They've got a bunch of them. You know, that to me, how do you win? Like you need to get some elite pieces, and they don't have any. I mean, I looked it up. You know, if you look at the forwards that they drafted, the highest scoring guy is Yanni Gourde. He was 91st in the NHL in scoring. Eberle was 116, and McCann was 123. I mean, it's going to be hard to win with if that's all you've got in terms of offense. You know, it doesn't mean that they can't, you know, try to trade for Brian Johansson, try to trade for Sean Monahan, try to, you know, fill in some gaps subsequently. But I guess that's a long way of saying I expected more. Yeah.
Well, Vegas clearly set the bar very, very high, Mr. Jaffe, and to you. And the danger here was in trying to match that bar. This is a bar that was had never been achieved. Nobody had ever come close to this. This team has now not missed the playoffs in their first 4 years. As a general rule, you're going to go 6-8 years before you make the playoffs as an expansion team, almost in any sport. That's the historical reference that you go by. If Seattle can't match Vegas's bar, and it's going to be almost impossible to do that, then what? Then what happens to that fervent fan base that exists at the beginning, all full of optimism and whatever? Because they're looking down the road and saying, well, Vegas did it. How come you can't do it? Right?
Vegas didn't have to do it in a world pandemic where that's changed the narrative of everything. I understand hockey is, you know, hockey is hockey, but you're talking about a flat cap. No, I mean, the currency of cap space is more valuable than ever before. I think they've had enough time to understand. Yes, they'd love to be Vegas where they're good, very good. First of all, Seattle's fans and all their pro sports are spectacular. I think the fervor is going to remain there for a long time, even if they're, let's just say, okay to good. By the way, I like their D crew right now better than a bunch of teams in the NHL. I'm not saying it's off the charts, but I think it's pretty good and big and strong, and they're only going to get better. I just think that this is a town that is absolutely jonesing for this. They're going to have a lot of spectacular features in their arena. I think they're going to keep that for a few years. Now, I think they're going to end up being pretty good. To Eric's point, there's going to be some moves made. We just don't know it right now. And I what's it going to be? I don't know. I mean, I wasn't shocked, fellas. Shanny, I wasn't shocked that they didn't go for a lot of big names. I mean, if it's a true report of Landeskog wanting $8 to $9 million, if that's true, you guys might know better than me in that scoop type of thing. I can't pay that to that guy for 7-8 years. I can't. And I love the kid. I love him for leadership, et cetera. But I need to be more prudent with my cash because, again, to Eric's point, there's going to be other teams out there that are going to offer something that you're going to get at many dollars, many fewer dollars than you would for something like that.
You know, the thing with this club is, and again, George, what George and Kelly did in Vegas is, it's the base, is that they started with their defense, got some goaltending, and then worried about scoring. I think in many ways, Seattle tried to do the same with their blue line. I am not convinced at this point about their goaltending, but that might change. And they're going to have a tough time scoring goals.
Yep.
And that's where perhaps maybe not this week, but maybe Eric, you know, they are going to be a little more active in free agency to try to find a goal scorer or two, don't you think?
Yeah, but here's what I would say to you, John. So they went out and signed a free agent goaltender and two free agent defensemen. I mean, Billy's right. When you have most teams adopting a 7-3-1 protection model, there are going to be more defensemen available than forwards. It's just flat out. You're getting the fourth best defenseman on both teams as opposed to the eighth best forward. This is why I don't understand why the first three free agents they signed, one was a goalie when there were goalie options, and two were defensemen when there were defensive options. Why not go out and get forwards? Because forwards are, you knew you were going to need forwards. You knew you were going to need centers. Now, granted, there, you know, no centers ever get to free agency. No number one or two centers ever get to free agency. Those guys get locked up time and time again. But like I say, I spend that money on forwards knowing that I'm going to get defensive help in the expansion draft and I'm going to get goaltending in the expansion draft. But it's just how they allocated the resources coming out of the gate that puzzled me a little bit. I'm not saying it's going to be right or wrong because, you know, Larson, if they keep Giordano, and if Giordano and Larson is your top pair, that's a pretty good place to start in a division where you're probably going to, you're defending against McDavid, you're defending against Pedersen. But I wonder why they committed the dollars that they did to positions where they were reasonably strong already and ignored the one position where they were very weak. And can I just add one thing to Bob's opening statement in this salvo? You know, Bob, you mentioned that, you know, that Vegas set the bar and it's never been done before. Those other teams, the Minnesotas, Columbuses, Nashville, that was all pre-cap. And so George was smart enough with his staff to realize that the landscape changed. And not only were the protection scenarios far more generous for the expansion team.
Far more generous.
But so that's part one. But the other thing is pre-cap, right? I mean, you know, when you have a salary cap, teams are forced into making certain moves. And that's why, you know, they ended up with draft choices from the Islanders and Columbus and so on and so forth, because those teams were boxed in by contracts that they had that in the pre-cap world wouldn't have been an issue. You just, you know, let the guy go, you pay him off, and it doesn't count against your cap. They were boxed in, and, you know, George was smart enough to realize that, but the landscape had changed so significantly. So if they had have had the kind of struggles that those teams that had in the, you know, the expansions between 1998 and 2000, it would have been a massive fail. You know, the NHL sometimes isn't very progressive, but in this particular case, they understood that having a basket case franchise in a city like Vegas would have been a disaster. And so they helped them get very good very quickly. And the same rules apply to Seattle. That's That's why at the end of the day, you know, Seattle will be a competitive team. I don't know that they'll necessarily be a playoff team. And by the way, that's the other thing. I don't know if George mentioned this, but when they started the process at first October, you know, they had guys like Neil on an expiring contract, Perron on an expiring contract. They thought those guys were going to be rentals because they didn't think they'd be in the playoff race. And then, you know, they caught lightning in a bottle and the script flipped and they were buyers rather than sellers at the end of the day. But they themselves were surprised at how well everything fell into place for them in that first year.
Billy, was there one player off the available list that surprised you that didn't go? Was there somebody that just said, oh, he's gone and didn't go?
No. I made up my own mock draft.
Yeah.
I think I got about 12, right? Maybe maybe actually a few more than that. One guy I thought maybe they would go for, maybe, and maybe I'm overvaluing him because of just recency bias, so to speak. I thought maybe they would, to Eric's point about forward, I thought maybe they would try and get a guy early on, like Philip Deneau from the Montreal Canadiens, you know, the free agency type of thing. Was I shocked about it? No, not at all. 'Cause the whole Carey Price thing took over that narrative. I mean, maybe I thought James Van Riemsdyk, but is it shocking to me, Shanny? No, it wasn't shocking, but I thought he could go. And I thought he would. I had him on my list of players that would go there. Nobody shocked me. I didn't think they would take Tarasenko. I just didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't think they would get that. You know, with the Bruins, the team obviously that I know well, I thought it would come down to Connor Clifton. I thought Cliffy would go. And then Jeremy Lauzon, I get it. A little more youth, a little more potential upside. And they're going for this size on the back end. And also Jay Leach. Well, Jay Leach knows Connor Clifton too, but he really knows Jeremy Lauzon even more, the top assistant for Dave Axtell's staff. So again, nothing shocked me though. Nothing shocked me to a point of like, oh my God, I can't believe that guy didn't go.
What about you, Eric?
Well, I thought JVR would be a guy that they would be interested in. You know, $7 million, a lot of money, but he had a really good year. You know, sort of that net front presence on the power play. I think that, you know, he's a guy that would have been their leading scorer if they had taken him. So I was prepared to see him go there. I thought Shane Gostisbehere, when you look at the three great years that Gostisbehere had before he fell off a cliff, they were playing for Dave Haxtell. I also look at that lineup, and while I like their defense, is there a true power play quarterback there? So, you know, maybe, as I say, I still feel that there could be something percolating between Philly and Seattle down the road. I mean, Seattle is just a team now, right? So they can just go out and they can, you know, trade for a guy like JVR, and if Philly's willing to take 20% of the cap hit back, then that makes it, you know, less expensive for Seattle. And then the other one was Jake Bean.
Me too.
You know, in the same way that, you know, Hayden Fleury was the first round pick ever for Ron Francis in Carolina. So Ron took the job in April of 2014. And 2 months later, he took Hayden Fleury in the first round. So 7 years have passed. You know, he's had some up and down times, but he's had a chance to mature. He's ready to play in sort of those quiet, invisible minutes in the NHL. So wasn't surprising to me that that was the pick from Anaheim. But I also thought that 2 years later, they'd been in the first round. You know, he had a chance this year to anchor that second power play. Obviously, Dougie Hamilton's the first power play guy in Carolina this past year. And, you know, a little bit slight in terms of physical stature, but you know, I think he is going to evolve into kind of a Shattenkirk type or a Tyson Berry type, or a guy that you kind of hide on your third pair 5-on-5, but can run a power play and really, really help you. And so, you know, the fact that they opted for Morgan Geeky instead of Bean, that surprised me as well. So there were a few that were a bit eyebrow raising, those would be the highest on my list. For
so Jake Bean was at the top of my surprise list. I thought for sure Jake Bean was going to Seattle. And the other guy, I really do, and this is where we have to wait and see. I would have taken Josh Bailey over Jordan Eberle. Mm-hmm. I really would have. I just think Josh Bailey's got better finish. I think I don't know, Billy, you've seen the play a lot more than we have, but I like Bailey more than Eberle. And you wonder now, as we wait for you know, the stories to come out, what Lou and Ronnie have concocted in order for them to take Eberle over Bailey.
Yeah. Bailey has a real almost folk following in the island. You know, he's
been. So did John Tavares.
So did John. Yeah. But it's funny. It's without John there now, Josh Bailey's become the, you know, the guy that leads them in playoff scoring since 1985. He's this wonderful person who I was with the Islander organization when he was drafted first. Remember, they traded down twice to get him, and sure, he's a phenomenal kid. They view him as a big time leader for that team as well. So I don't know.
I tell you what, you're selling me on why he should be in Seattle.
I know,
man.
I know. It's you're right. To your point, maybe there was something that was concocted. I look. Josh, I'm biased towards Josh. I'm happy he's still in the island. I know how much he loves it, but to your point, it's fair. I could have seen him definitely going over Eberle there.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and chat some more on the day after the expansion draft involving the new Seattle Kraken with the Hotchick and Jaffe back after these messages. Bob McCown, John Shannon, Eric the Hotchick, Billy Jaffe, all with you. Earlier, I think, Jaffe, it was you who mentioned the name Carey Price, who dominated the conversation in the days leading up to this draft. And there were, well, obviously people on both sides of the equation. Should they? Shouldn't they? The injury situation made it a gray area. On the 5 years left on his contract at 10-5 made it a gray area. One thing that wasn't a gray area was the geography and the fact that Carey's wife is from Washington State, that Carey's from west coast of Canada. I guess they have a place there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of selling features that become important when you're trying to sell tickets. And it was pointed out, well, they don't have to sell tickets in Seattle. They've sold them all. But you can make a lot of money selling jerseys too. And his jersey would have been off the charts. Was that the right move to pass on him, or was it the wrong one? Billy, to you.
I never really believed, gentlemen, that they were going to take him when it was all said and done, due to the first couple of comments that you mentioned, Bobby, about him. Just the injury being number one. Where is this body at? Of course, he had a fantastic playoff run. Couldn't have happened at a better time, or if you're the Kraken, maybe a worse time, because it muddied the waters a little bit more and they made him think more about it. I don't know. I think they had that once it became official that he was out there. Yes, they did their due diligence, etc. I mean, I never thought it got to a point where they absolutely were going to take him and then they back. I never thought it was more than 50-50 at best because of those other things that you mentioned. The money, and I go back to what we talked about earlier, the cap space cachet or the importance of that is huge. If it was 2 years left on his deal, different story, Bob. I think a different story. You're willing to take that because you're right. You make up and carry, you make up whatever different Carey Price jerseys and the fan club, et cetera. You do everything. You market the you-know-what out of it. I think the 5 years and everything was just too much when it's all said and done.
Eric?
If the marketing department had been making the decision rather than the hockey department, I agree. Carey Price might have been the choice. But to me, it wasn't, you know, black and white at all, or gray areas at all, as you say, Bob. It was black and white. I could not imagine any circumstances on which they were prepared to give up one eighth of their salary cap space on a 34-year-old guy with 5 years left that has hip and knee injuries. We did a mock draft. We had five of our writers do a war room and we, you know, when the available list came out, I said, okay, we have to start with Carey Price. I said, we were going to start alphabetically. We're going to start with Anaheim and go all the way through and pick our team. And I said, we have to start with Carey Price because our decision on Carey Price is going to affect all the other 29 players that we pick. If we mm-hmm. take Carey Price, then we have already committed $10.5 million. We're trying to stay as close to the minimum threshold as the league required, which was right around $50 million. And now we're giving him $10. I said, no chance. And you know, our consensus, it was unanimous. It was 5-0 that we are not taking Carey Price. We need to preserve that money for other additions. And so I think you want a Marc-Andre Fleury type in goal, because if you look at all the success that Vegas has had, most of it comes from the fact that they've had this standout guy playing goal for them for the first 4 years. But I thought the risk was too great. Now, you know, was I prepared to entertain Jonathan Quick at 5'8"? Yeah, a little bit. You know, again, not as much of an injury history there. Only 2 years left on the contract. Great pedigree, tremendously competitive, great athlete. And the actual dollars are nickels at times. It's like $3 million, I think, for the second to last year of the contract, and 2.5. So if they were prepared to go for a big name goalie with a pedigree, I would have picked Quick over Price or Braden Holtby, who was also out there. But at 4-3 was too much for me for the kind of year that he had. So, you're right. A lot of smoke and mirrors around Carey Price, but I thought that's all it was, smoke and mirrors.
Well, one of the interesting things that McPhee brought up was, because we talked to him specifically about the Fleury deal, and he made a really interesting point. He said, we assumed our fan base would understand losing, and the fan base would understand losing a game 2-1 or 3-2. The hard part was going to be if you lost 6-2 or 7-2 every night. And in order to prevent that, the focus, well, in general hockey terms anyway, was defense and goaltending. Mm-hmm. And the Kraken seem to have spent considerable time and significant focus on defense, but are essentially rolling the dice in goal. You can analyze the three guys however you want, but they don't know what they've got when the season starts. And they could have known. And if it was, as you said, E, maybe it wasn't Carey Price from an economic standpoint, but Quick or Holtby or somebody who you know is at least an NHL goaltender.
Yeah. Which makes you wonder, Bob, whether, I mean, they only picked the minimum of three goaltenders. Other teams, in memory serves me, I think Vegas picked five. They only picked threes, and now we're into the buying season, and you wonder if they're going to go and try to do something this summer.
Oh, I think that's a must
for a veteran goaltender. Oh, so do I, but and the other thing is, not only do they have, I think, a good defense, they have a huge defense, and they have a tough defense. They have a philosophy on their blue line that they are going to take no prisoners. When you think of guys like that, like Curtis McDermott out of LA and Jamie, who's a tough guy, they're going to be a really tough defensive team to play against all season long.
The Lausanne kid's a tough kid too. I mean, yeah. They've got 7-8 legit guys. Now, again, they might not be top tier guys, but yeah, that mid tier that will form a very good defense that, again, I go back, this many teams would look at and say, I'd take that. Now, I agree with you. The goaltending, they are absolutely – I'll be shocked. I will be shocked. If I had any money in my pocket to bet, I would do it right now, that they – Canadian or American dollars – that they will absolutely go out and get another goalie.
I'll tell you what. You can bet me in Canadian or in American, and I will pay you in Canadian. How's that, Billy? That's the way to do it.
Canadian beer.
Remember,
that's
fool
all
me.
I want. Canadian beer.
Fool me once. Shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Eric, the one thing that appeared to me last night, and Brad Treliving had a press conference, I think one of the few other managers that did after the event, because they lost a key component for a decade and a half of their franchise. What are the ramifications of losing Mark Giordano?
Well, I think significant. They went into the exercise with their eyes wide open. So let's backtrack to the point where they were signing Chris Tanev last year at the out of free agency. So last year they went in the free agent market. They signed the goaltender from Vancouver, Markstrom, and they signed Tanev. And I think the feeling at that time was they gave him, it was considered an overpay, I think, of 4 years, $4.5 million. But the feeling was that if they had a protection issue, they could leave Tanev available, and the idea would be that if Vegas or if Seattle then took Tanev, they would just go into the market and replace him with another defenseman that you would overpay for, $4.5 million over 4 years, so that there would be options, because there are always options in free agency. Well, what ended up happening, of course, was Tanev played sensationally, helped Noah Hanifin get to another level, proved to be an incredible glue guy. It's an overused term, but they were pleasantly surprised at how effective he was and how important he became to that team right away. So suddenly now they're in this protection quandary, because they have two young defensemen, Hanifin and Anderson, that they consider to have bright, long, you know, futures with the team. And then you have a 37 going on 38-year-old captain. So they felt kind of boxed into a corner there, but increasingly realized that they could lose him. And I think what ended up changing the narrative a little bit internally was, I think they felt that they could steer Seattle away with, you know, like a pick, a second rounder or a third rounder, until the trade deadline rolled around. And all of a sudden, what are teams paying just to rent Nick Foligno and just to rent David Savard? First round picks, right? And so Ron Francis is not a stupid man. He's looking at that saying, okay, so here's a guy that's available. He's on an expiring contract, which makes him a perfect rental for next year. If David Savard is going for a first, what do you get for the 2019 Norris Trophy winner? If they have to move pieces at the deadline because they're not in the race, you're going to get a first for him. So that's why the ask was a first and a third from Calgary, because, you know, the argument from Seattle's side was, we can get that at the deadline if we want it. And in the meantime, you can come in and build culture for us. So, you know, if you're Calgary, do you want to give up the 12th overall pick in the draft for a guy that, you know, is probably going to play 1 to 2 more years? The answer was no. And so, you know, he was the face of the franchise after Jerome Iginla left. He has that quiet leadership. You know, he's always front and center, you know, explaining away losses, you know, while everybody else is scurrying off and hiding. You know, I've covered hockey for more than 40 years, and there aren't 5 better people in the game than Mark Giordano that I've come across. Just a really good person, you know, active in the community, not one of those fake active guys that, you know, that appears for the photo opportunity and then disappears. He and his wife were genuinely committed to being in the community and doing good things in the community and always being around the town. I mean, it checks so many boxes in terms of what he accomplished for that organization. So it really was the end of an era. And, you know, when you think about what 30 teams lost on Wednesday night, I mean, there's no question in my mind that Calgary lost the most. You know, they lost a really important piece. And you know, the silver lining is that, you know, they've got almost $7 million in extra cap space, but they have a hole they have to fill. And so, you know, the Mark Giordano chapter closed in the same way that the Jerome Iginla chapter closed. And now they've got to press forward and see where it goes. And certainly a new leadership group has to evolve, because, you know, Giordano was the guy that did most of the heavy lifting in the last, you know, the last half of his 15-year career in Calgary.
It is my belief, and I think it has been documented, that it is impossible to win a game if you don't score a goal. You can't win nothing. And while this team will, I think we all agree, will improve their goaltending situation from where it is right now, and the defense is clearly their strength, the goal scoring is going to be the issue. Vegas had a guy named Carlson come in and shockingly score 44. Who on this list might be the next Carlson? Because getting goal scorers is not going to be an easy task. And they don't have any, they have very few. Is there a guy out there that either of you two have looked at and said, well, maybe this is an emerging talent like a William Carlson? I'm guessing no, just no, by the immediate pause.
Does Jared McCann fall into that?
No,
maybe, meaning, but
maybe not 40, but does he fall into the, I don't remember what his average time on ice was last year, but does he get 2 more minutes a game, more power play time, you know, and he gets that proverbial opportunity? Maybe. I mean, off this list, nobody truly jumps up. The one guy I think that will do great there, albeit he's injured to begin it, is Yanni Gourde. I don't think he's going to, again, score 40, but I do think that he is going to bring a lot of his P&V, right? His piss and vinegar that he's awesome with, and he is take no prisoners and relentless. And I think along with Giordano, he's a really good leader for this team, part of a leadership core for this team. I could see him getting it. Now, where do they purpose him, though? Do they purpose him as a top six, or do they leave him in that third line role that he is so good at? And that could impact his output offensively. Of course, the injury, the surgery, et cetera, that's going to impact more than anything. But I think the hope is off this list is that maybe a McCann and maybe, I mean, you guys see, look, Shanny, you and I talked, and hear me out here, because we talked about Mason Appleton a few months ago. Can this kid be that guy in the top, I won't say three, but six or nine role that does more, shows more production than he showed with Winnipeg? Could that kid type
of thing? I'll tell you what, Appleton's a great pickup, but he's not a top six forward. And Winnipeg, as deep as they are at forward, they're going to miss Appleton. They really are. That's a bad loss too. Actually, the three Prairie teams, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, lost valuable members of their club in the expansion draft, maybe more than any other part of the draft. Because Larson, they're going to miss Larson a lot in Edmonton too. Mm-hmm. The only two guys I really, and I actually sent Ron a note last night saying I love two of your picks. I did. I love two of your picks. I love Brandon Tan.
I hate the rest, Ron, but I love these two.
Well, no, he knows. I'm pretty odd. Unfortunately, I have this. I have this characteristic of being a little too honest, but I love Brandon Tanev because I think Brandon Tanev is perfect for a new franchise. He is going to be a whirling dervish there. He is going to be, there are going to be tons of Brandon Tanev sweaters sold at the arena. And I love Jonas Donskoy, but Donskoy obviously is underachieved in Colorado too, from when he was in San Jose. So those two picks I like. I'm not sure where their goal scoring is going to come from. Eric, do you know?
No, not well. I think Gourde is their best player up front, no question. You know, the top six. I mean, he's top three on that team. And like Billy, I thought, you know, McCann is a guy who has shown glimpses of being really good offensively, and then, you know, and there's been stretches of inconsistency too. So, I guess the only thing that I would say is that when William Karlsson was the pick in Columbus, he was the one that they had to take to make that deal work, and his scoring came out of nowhere. So, you know, I mean, but no, I think that kind of lightning in a bottle miracle is not going to happen with any of these players.
Well, the only difference there, in fairness with Karlsson, as I recollect, he hadn't really been given much of an opportunity. We really didn't know that much about Karlsson as to what his potential was. He had upside. Obviously, he overachieved. But Gourde, I think we know him better.
Well, yeah.
You know, and
a really good player. I mean, he's
yeah, he is a very good player. But I mean, in terms of scoring goals.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's not McDavid, you know, like he's not.
Well, no,
he's not, you know, he's
not even Brian McDavid. Are you kidding me? I mean,
that's what I mean. Like they just don't have that. Like they have no first line. So I think what they'll do is, so you talk to some coaches around the National Hockey League, and some teams like to go with a top six and a bottom six. But increasingly, you're hearing coaches talk about a top nine and a bottom three. So your bottom three is a line that's going to play, you know, 8 to 10 minutes a night and be an energy line and maybe have a, you know, like a heavyweight on it, but really doesn't play a lot. And then you balance out three lines. And there really is no distinction between a first, a second, and a third. You have an A, a B, and a C line, and they're all about the same. And I think that, you know, unless they significantly upgrade this group, that's what you're going to see with Seattle. I think they're going to have three lines that play about the same amount of even strength ice time and are probably going to produce about the same amount of offense. I don't think that there's going to be a distinct first line like you have in Edmonton or Toronto, you know, where, you know, the gap between the top and even the third line is very significant. In Seattle, I think there's going to be nine comparably talented forwards, all producing hopefully 15 to 20 goals a year. You get scoring by committee, you know, somebody has to come in and sort of be the trigger man on the power play. Someone has to come in and run the power play, as far as I'm concerned. As good as this defense is, I just don't see somebody that it's going to be a natural power play guy, unless it's Giordano, because Giordano has run the power play mostly in Calgary. Like this past year, when Jeff Ward was originally coaching the team, they gave the job to Rasmus Anderson. They tried Panafin there a little bit. They tried Valimaki there for about two semi-disastrous games. And eventually they ended up, putting Giordano back at times too. That, I mean, it was a work in progress throughout the whole year. He can do it and has done it, and he may have to do it again here.
Could you see Ron? I mean, we know he took Geeky because he liked him, and he took Fleury because he liked him and had drafted him. Could you see him trying to make a stab at Dougie Hamilton to fill that void? I mean, they have the money. They have the money. And then because all these guys we've talked about on the blue line, you can move any of them anytime. I mean, there's going to be some appetite for some of those players short term, even for teams. Could you see them going for a big free agent?
My big free agent, again, Landeskog. The thing about him. So Dougie Hamilton, Ron wasn't the general manager that made that trade, right? So Ron had left, and it was Donnie Waddell and Bradtree Living that made that trade that sent Hamilton from Calgary to Carolina. So really, Francis doesn't have a history with him. His analytics are great, and analytics are really important in that Seattle front office in terms of trying to sort of see things that maybe the rest of us don't in guys. I they've already committed a fair number of free agent dollars to two defensemen. I can't see how you can commit a lot of your remaining free agent dollars to another defenseman, unless you end up moving, six of your picks in the expansion draft to other teams and, get a few draft choices here and there. I think they have to prioritize the thing that we've been spending the last 20 minutes talking about, get some scoring, get some top six forwards, because that's really what's missing. And you look at, so Friday's the entry draft, the consensus number one overall pick is Owen Power, defenseman. He'll probably be off the board. You have to draft, right? I mean, the one thing that Ronnie is smart enough to know is that, a true number one center, or even a true number two center, you very rarely find those guys, and if you do, it's because they're overpriced or on the way down. So they'll draft a center and hope in 3 years time or 4 years time they develop their own number one, and they have to patch until that point. And so I think that's what the strategy is going to be.
I think they draft Matty Beniers. I think that's pretty conclusive that they'll take. And I think that they bring in two 20 goal scorers. Be a free agency or trade. I do. I think they absolutely do. We're having this conversation. Exactly. We're having this obvious conversation. They can't score. We're talking about it, and we're the puckheads or whatever you called us. And trust me, those guys over there.
Yeah, they know.
They know. They know that they're going to need two 20 goal guys. I go back to what Eric, what you're saying. I love Gabe Landeskog. I just can't, if we're talking 7-8 years with that body and $8-9 million, I just, that's a huge road to go down that goes against everything, at least that we've seen so far with them. But I think they figure out a way, one via free agency and one via trade, that they had two 20 plus goal scorers between now and October 1st or whatever.
And you're convinced it's Beniers over Dylan Gunther?
I know more about Beniers than I do about Gunther. So I'll take, again, what I know, having, the kid played at Michigan, understanding that, knowing more about college. And what I read and what Beniers has got a flair to him that, as many people say, reminds a lot of people of Ronnie Francis in certain ways. We're not saying he's a Hall of Famer. Let's, pump breaks here and there, but it's that center. I don't know. That's just what I feel, that they'll go in that market.
That was my point, John, in one of the last things that I wrote, that what Ronnie really needs to do is turn the clock back on his own body and insert a 20-year-old Ron Francis into that lineup. If you could do that, you're gold. So, and the other thing I'd like to say is that, I don't know if this will be perceived as being critical of what they did or not, but I always think of this as this is the midterm, right? So and the final exam is still coming up. So you can't grade Seattle on what they've accomplished so far.
Agreed.
It's the first midterm. I think they did a decent job of working within the rules that they had and preserving the cap space. But really, it'll be the lineup that goes into training camp, or maybe even the lineup on opening night, because what ends up happening as you get closer to opening night is that pressure on teams to get camp compliant starts to get greater and greater and greater. And the minute that that happens, your leverage increases. And so, that's when we'll know what they've got.
Right.
October, 12th or whatever it is against Vegas. So it's hard to give them it's an incomplete grade for me right now because, there's still lots and lots of movement still to come.
How did you do on midterms, Billy?
Midterms?
Yeah.
I didn't do well in early terms. Midterms are actually, I had one good, really good year. I hung in there.
That's a subject I'm sure for another show. We've kept you guys long enough. By the way, in my ever vigilant desire to educate and inform, the phrase that two of the three of you screwed up is fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
On me. That's right.
All right. So try and remember that. So the next time we get together, there may be a test and it won't be a midterm. It'll be a final.
Listen, if we recorded this later at night and I'm drinking a different brew than the coffee brew I'm drinking, I guarantee you I would have been fine, Bobby. I would have been fine.
I don't doubt that for a second, Jeffy. Boys, it's always our pleasure. Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it. And we'll catch up with you down the road, probably after the summertime goes through. Enjoy the rest of the off season. Thanks, guys.
You too. Thanks.
Eric Dehajic, Billy Jaffe. We'll be back after this. McCown and Shannon, and our thanks to Dehajic and Jaffe for being on the program today. Well, one of the things you mentioned off the very top of the show that we didn't get into in the body was, I think we sort of addressed this with McPhee, if I'm not mistaken, yesterday, but by the time the television show arrived, virtually every name had been
mm-hmm. Well, every name was
out there.
Every name was out.
And I hate to say this, but if you let television rule your business will suffer in the end, because television is nothing but greed.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's a little more than greed.
No, it's pretty much all greed.
Okay.
I mean, how can you have a team go through this process privately and then wait 8, 10, 24, 48 hours and announce it publicly, expecting it to be a surprise? It's beyond stupid.
Well, it was a 10-hour window when everything came out. And really what happened was is that, when you paid $650 million, I think you pay $650 million to get some secrecy. And the other teams didn't play along. The agents didn't play along. I believe that, there's a good chance that the players themselves didn't play along. And really what has to happen is that you have to put your list in. There's a protocol to deciding whether the contract is valid or not, blah, 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 all that legalese stuff. Plus you have to be able to contact the player to say you have been selected by Seattle. So there is a process that you need to be able to put in for Seattle's list before it gets announced.
Well, hold on. You said they have to contact the player. Why?
Well, I think that's part of collective bargaining, Bob.
Why?
I think that's because I
what is the what?
In fairness to the player. I mean, we're talking about changing.
What difference does it make if he finds out 10 hours before or when the draft is being conducted?
Because we're talking about changing people's lives. We're talking about
it's
changing
10 hours.
We're talking.
You're doing
about
that
fans.
With an amateur draft year.
So here's my point, though, Bob. Here's my point. Could the window have been 30 minutes? Could the window have been 60 minutes between when Seattle put the team in and they unveil it?
And the answer is yes.
It should have been. And hopefully they have learned that lesson. And as I said at the top of the show, I hope we never have to go through this anyway, because 32 teams is enough. and I don't want another expansion.
Well, it would be, you know, what would be really nice is if you had people who were smart enough running this league who could figure this out in advance and wouldn't have to fail first before they decided, oh, that didn't work, let's change it.
Yeah, but I it's interesting because I do think they did a better job of keeping it a secret for Vegas than they did this time. The secret driving force in so many ways in this sport and lots of sports are agents, and agents need to fuel the machine too in order to get favors from people and media people. And I feel that that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, but that's not an excuse.
That's pointing a finger at agents
as being the culprits in this. It doesn't matter. They're all part of the infrastructure that is hockey and the National Hockey League.
Agreed. I agree. Bob, I'm the one that was disappointed.
Look,
I'm just explaining what happened.
If you want to make the announcement at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then have the television show at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's what I'm saying. If you're going to have a draft and it is supposed to be legit, I'm not watching a television show after I know exactly what's happened.
I think that's a fair comment. A really fair comment. I'd love to know how the ratings in both countries was affected with all the news coming out during the day.
Well, I can tell you that one less viewer, because you know I'm not a hockey puck and I didn't know everyone, but I knew a bunch of the names that were already out over the course of the day.
Sure.
And I knew that they weren't going to take Carey Price. And that was by miles the biggest name. And am I going to invest 2 hours or however long it went for that, show? When I know what's going to come? No. But I'll tell you, I will also say this. That was a show that was run by what? NHL Network?
I think the league produced it. Yeah. So you did watch it after all?
I flipped over a couple of times. If you're a sports nut, are you not pissed that you had essentially, I didn't see any role for them. Did they have a role?
No, but they probably got it for free, Bob. And they got the commercials.
That answers that question. If you can get it for free, you certainly wouldn't want to put your personalities in front of the camera.
No, but like, for instance,
let's put a couple of people Canadians have never seen.
Well, for instance, that's not fair, but the draft on Friday night, Sportsnet is directly involved. In fact, Elliot, our buddy Elliot, and Sam Cosentino are on the broadcast that will be seen in both countries. So there are times that Sportsnet has contributed.
Oh, great. And how many American guys are on that broadcast?
I don't know. I think John Buchergras is the host, but I don't know who else is on the show.
I can guarantee it'll be more than sports.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll count. We'll count the announcers.
You count them. I'm not watching.
No, you can check during the commercials.
Well, it depends on what I'm doing. I may have other plans. You never know, John.
Do say.
That's enough of this nonsense. Baseball tomorrow. The Toronto Blue Jays are about to, they've finished now their prison sentence in Buffalo and will now have to come back to Toronto to lose further games.
Vaccined or non-vaccined, right?
Well, whatever we think is now irrelevant because they're going to do it, and it starts in a couple of weeks. We'll address that with Morosi. That's tomorrow. Hope you'll join us for that. Until then, see ya.